My name is Hawkman, and I love to shite.
Everybody, and welcome once again to the Punch Sport Podcast. I am the Goog.
Joining How many episodes is this?
This is episode number 21 of the 10 count. Joining me this week, we have Mass Rafter.
Oh, Mongo underscore ebooks, that's right.
Hey!
We also have Kung Fu Grip.
Hi.
And making his return to the Punch Sport Podcast, it's Grody.
Oh.
We are going to do, as I said, episode number 21 of the 10 count. And if you've got a question for us, you can email it to us, punchsportpodcast@gmail.com, or send it to us on Twitter @punchsportpod. Our first topic is about WWE Payback. We didn't get a chance to do a show after the pay-per-view last night, so let's just generally go over what did we think of Payback.
Great show. One of the best WWE pay-per-views in a long time.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic there, but I actually thought it was a pretty good show.
I'm not being sarcastic, but I didn't see it, so I'm just going to tell you what Dave Meltzer said, because he's right.
I refuse to believe that Dave Meltzer said it was a great show, because I like Dave Meltzer, and it wasn't a great show, but I thought it was pretty good.
Do I need to read Dave Meltzer's thoughts on the show?
Please don't.
Dave Meltzer thought that Punk versus Jericho was match of the night.
I would agree
match,
with that.
He thought it might have been match of the year quality, actually, and I did not think so.
Well,
for America, I did not really like. Huh?
For America. America? I can see it.
Yeah. Specifically, he said this was close to a match of the year.
I would agree with that. I would say it's probably the third best Punk match I've seen this year, and probably top 10 in matches I've seen this year. It was a really good match.
And he thought the main event was a strong match. But he said, really? The show is highly recommended if you missed it, largely for Punk versus Jericho, but most of the matches were good. Nothing else was great, but one of the better PPV shows. So anyone who wants to state an opinion after this, you're going to be going against Dave Meltzer if you don't agree with that.
I guess I'm against Dave. Because, I mean, like, I guess you can watch the show. I didn't think...
You don't go against Big Dave.
Well, yeah, I don't want to uphold Meltzer as like this paragon of objectiveness where if you disagree with him, you're absolutely wrong. But for the most part, I would think he's right there in that Punk versus Jericho was a really good match. I thought the tag team title match was pretty good. The main event was pretty bad up until the ambulance match, honestly. But I thought on the whole it was a fine to good show.
What was everybody's favorite match of the show?
I'd say Punk and Jericho.
I kind of liked the opening and the pre-show a little, but like I think I'm trying to think of what all the matches were off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really like most of the matches, I guess.
Dave Meltzer tells me that my favorite match was CM Punk versus Chris Jericho.
Now, what did you not like about Punk and Jericho, KFG?
I didn't like how sloppy it kind of came off as, and I don't know if it might have been, people are going to say it might have been intended to be kind of sloppy because the idea was that Punk hasn't wrestled in a while and he might be ring rusted or whatever, but I don't think Jericho and Punk really click at all.
I would agree on that. You know, this wasn't a 4.5 star match or anything like that, but I would say it was the best Punk and Jericho match. You know, they've had at least three now.
Me and Grody were talking about it, and Grody said basically, you said like they're both people that want to lead.
I think
right? It's
when they put a match together, they both want to call in the ring, but they can't decide which one's going to actually call it for all the base of the match. And that causes for a lot of miscommunication and both of them kind of wanting to take the larger portion of the match when it's their turn to, either shine or get the heat.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, because like, another problem for me was how the offense was kind of weak. Like, the first go-to-sleep completely whiffed.
Yeah.
And it was obvious it whiffed. And Jericho sold it like death. And it was like, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But then some of the strikes were really shitty and weak, too. Like, Punk's punches were really bad. And Jericho's forearms were really bad. And I don't know. It it just never clicked for me. And I mean, I like both the wrestlers. I mean,
I think they both be used to working with larger guys.
Maybe a little recently. I mean, I don't know. Maybe not Jericho, because Fandango's not that big.
But. Yeah, but Fandango didn't exactly help Jericho's career out.
Well, yeah. I think for the Dolph Ziggler and Del Rio match, I wasn't able to pay much attention to the fact besides that if it was a good match or not, because all I was interested in was the fact that Del Rio is really vicious and nasty.
Yeah,
and I really liked this match a lot. This was my favorite match of the night.
And the people watching with me that are casual viewers who hate Dolph Ziggler were like, wow, this is really fucked up. Like, Dolph Ziggler doesn't deserve this shit. And I thought, that's pretty right. And I didn't realize, they're doing a double turn until like later when he just kept attacking and he like pushed the referee out of the way and he pushed AJ out of the way and he kicked her belt and they both, Ricardo and Del Rio, yelled at her, like called her a terrible woman or something like that. I'm like, oh crap, they're doing a double turn.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I actually, let's just make this topic number two, I guess, because I wanted to talk about that more in depth. I thought it was a really well executed double turn. You know, it told a logical story with Ziggler coming back from the concussion and Del Rio targeting the head. And then it was like, okay, Del Rio's targeting the head. Oh, Dolph hurt himself. And then it's just, it kept building and building and building. And you realized, oh, hey, they really are doing this double turn. And it felt, I don't know if they were doing it. I'm sure they weren't doing it solely because they knew that Ziggler was going to be very popular in Chicago going in, but I think it certainly helped that the crowd on site was more than ready to cheer Dolph Ziggler. So they really got behind him, and I thought that Ziggler was going to overcome and win, but he didn't, and that's probably for the best. You know, I saw a lot of people immediately after the match saying, oh, WWE doesn't know what to do with Dolph Ziggler. They have the next Shawn Michaels on hand and they can't do anything right with him. And I was like, screw you, guy. You know, I wanted to remind the person who told me that, you know, Steve Austin lost the match where he turned face and he turned out okay. You know, I'm not saying that Ziggler is going to become the next Steve Austin because of this. But I think he's going to have, based on this match and then what happened tonight on Raw, I think he's going to have a pretty strong face run, at least in the short term.
Wait, yeah, what did he call him the next Shawn Michaels?
A friend of mine on Twitter said that, you know, he said that WWE has the next HBK, and they're totally screwing up with him.
Does he know that?
Don't say anything. Yeah. Don't say anything. Okay. The Goog. Can you stop being the stupidest wrestling fan?
I am
not talking about Dolph Ziggler. He's talking about Heath Slater.
I think you just wanted to beat KFG to that joke.
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
He got mad because I beat him to the best Quackenbush joke. So.
God damn it. Stop reminding me.
it's a running joke. Sorry you weren't here for however many shows. I thought it was interesting how they did the whole Dolph Ziggler won't be there thing on the show. Like, Dolph Ziggler's not here because concussions, again, because Del Rio gave him a concussion, and then at the end of the show he attacks Del Rio from behind to a decent pop. I mean...
Yeah,
it could have been bigger if I guess maybe they weren't burnt out from the finish.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say shit finish, but it wasn't really a shit finish because it cements the fact that Del Rio and Ricardo are now becoming cowardly also along with being bitter.
Well, they're heels, like, so of course they're cowards.
Well, they're not doing the... Well, yeah, I guess kind of they're doing kind of the Bret Hart heel turn, exactly, because they're doing the whole, I did it for myself, I did it for my people... While everybody else is cheering for that pig Jack Swagger, which he should just straight out said the racist Jack Swagger or something like that, to get over the point that, hey, shades of gray, I'm not the bad guy here. You guys are.
Is WWE going to be running a 5-month-long tour of Mexico in the near future?
Probably not.
No, but I don't know. It's just, I thought.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that Del Rio transitions pretty much directly from feuding with the Tea Party heel Jack Swagger to being a heel who you should boo in part because he isn't from here.
Yeah, it's sort of weird. It's sort of boo because you don't respect me and what I've done for you people.
Yeah.
And for, like, being the hero of the conquering cowards and disgusting pigs and slime and stuff like that. And then he was like, you guys chant that pig. You guys chant it in support of him. USA, USA. And people start chanting USA, USA. I'm like, the fucking crowd's missing the point, and they're just chanting because they like chanting easy things.
The point is that the crowd is missing the point, and that Del Rio gets frustrated with that, and then goes above and beyond what's fair to the point where a person watching can say, hey, you might have a point, but you're a colossal asshole, so fuck you. That's, honestly, that's every good wrestling heel ever, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. MRT, what do you think about all of this?
I'm glad that they finally fucking turned Dolph Ziggler babyface because it's so stupid for him to be a heel.
Now, why do you say that?
Because I like him.
I mean, I think Ziggler was really fantastic at being the smug, show-offy prick. But why do you say it's ridiculous for him to be a heel?
I think it's ridiculous for him to be a heel for life. I mean, this is a guy who's been a heel ever since he debuted as Dolph Ziggler. And he's a short dude who sells really well and is really athletic. He's someone who can get a tremendous amount of sympathetic babyface heat for taking, like, a really bad beating and selling it really well. And I think if, like, the WWE were to just do a turn with him where, you know, he got to use his powers of selling, that, you know, I think it would go really well.
Do you think he has the potential to be a top A-list or B-list main eventer, though, in WWE? Or do you think he's going to be basically relegated to the big gold belt level?
I don't
Do you think he has any shelf in the future as a top star?
I don't know.
I think maybe he can get the top star of the sympathetic face that they want out of Cena. Because Cena doesn't do the whole, I'm getting hurt, I'm really getting destroyed, please cheer for me so I don't get killed stuff. He does more of, cheer for me so I can kill the other guy kind of stuff, like Hulk Hogan did. So he's more like, I guess, a Bret Hart kind of, like, face where people would cheer Bret Hart so that because they wanted to see him come back, or they wanted to cheer Shawn Michaels because they wanted to see him come back after the ass kicking and like survive the ass kicking instead of just getting killed. I don't know.
Yeah,
he's going to be a different face basically than Cena would be if he can get high enough. He'll be like the Daniel. No, because Daniel Bryan's more, he's over as a face because of how explosive and stuff he'd be. Dolph Ziggler's over as a face because of how much he sells and his. Basically his charisma, I guess, which is okay. And Cena is kind of over as a face because he's been there for a while.
Right. I would say, you know, Dolph is never going to be Cena. Nobody is ever going to be on the level of John Cena. But I would think the talent and the charisma, at least, are there for Dolph to be on that next level, on the level of a Randy Orton or a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk as the number two face in the company. I think he could get that if WWE was inclined to push him there.
Mm-hmm.
I think John Cena really sucks while Dolph Ziggler is like the best wrestler. So like Dolph Ziggler could totally like not just be the next John Cena. He could be like better than the next John Cena. Yeah. He could be like, you know, good. John Cena can't sell and can't do a promo, and he looks like a jerk.
Some people, I mean, it's pretty fair to say he might look like a jerk, but you know, that's all I'll agree with, man.
But he's got a big penis.
Hey, you know who else might... Oh, God, I'm not even going to use that segue. I'm not.
You know who else might have a big penis? Mark Henry.
I was actually going to segue into Mark Henry, but I'm not going to use that one. Let's just talk about Mark Henry. Because topic number three...
You know who's got big muscles? Mark Henry.
Mark Henry, Mark Henry yeah. has very big muscles. Thank you. And he also has a very big, very stylish pink sport coat, which I will never get to wear, but damn it, he looked good in it. And he came out for what I thought was an, okay, when Mark Henry came to the ring tonight, I thought there's no way he's actually retiring. He's just going to destroy Cena. And then he was so good at his promo he played it as if it was a retirement promo. He told his story. He cried. He talked to the fans. He talked about his family. And, you know, John Cena gave him the WWE title and Mark gave it back and said, no, 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 you have to earn this. And then at the end of the promo, he said, I'm coming home. And Cena got in the ring and raised his hand and he went to give him a big hug. And Mark Henry, the lovable old bear that he is, he squeezed John Cena and he slammed him down to the mat. Because fuck John Cena. That was awesome. That was the best. I loved that.
I thought it was also great because the crowd, it was like the crowd didn't, were still into it. Like him into Mark Henry being
they
emotional
it,
and
they
touching
it.
Hook,
line, and sinker. And they also didn't like John Cena. So when Mark Henry slammed John Cena, they just went nuts.
Well, I don't know if it was angry nuts or happy nuts, because there are people still going, thank you, Cena. Thank you, Henry.
That got a huge cheer. I mean, even during the retirement promo, when Henry was like, you know, I've never done the things John's done, that got boos. Or, you know, John, I was a seasoned veteran when you came in 10 years ago, and I think you might be the best ever. That got a ton of boos. Those people hated John Cena, and they loved Mark Henry. So when Mark Henry decided to squish John Cena, they ate it up with a spoon. I just loved that. I loved that entire segment. I know Mark Henry isn't going to win the WWE title, but fuck, I want him to. And I want him to do it in a 2-minute match because I still hate Mark Henry matches, but God, that promo was good. So good.
Yes, it was a good promo. And I was like, damn, Mark Henry's great. And the crowd was great. I thought the crowd was actually good the whole show. So
really good.
It's good that they had a good, it's good that they had a good crowd for Mark Henry's retirement.
Yes.
I think they're still, like, in Chicago, actually.
They were in Grand Rapids.
Mm. So, yeah, they probably still had the same crowd from Payback a little, though. I definitely saw some of the same signs.
I would suggest that a non-zero amount of people made the trip up from Chicago.
I think that Brock Lesnar shirt dude and the sign guy were in the crowd, so...
Quite possible.
I think they count.
Does Brock Lesnar shirt dude only for Brock Lesnar shows?
No, he was on Payback, so, because Sheamus was posing with him in the crowd.
I don't have anything else to say. I just wanted to comment on how great that promo was, because that was so great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling it, because it means I'm going to be denied by John Cena, Daniel Bryan feud.
Not denied, it's just going to be put off, you know?
It's next, brother.
Yeah, John Cena is going to beat Mark Henry at Money in the Bank, or something. And eventually, we'll get John Cena beating Daniel Bryan.
But yeah, no way plans will change.
Yeah, the bad news is you do have to see
it. Putting
John Cena,
faith
Mark
in
Henry
WWE
match.
Having long-term booking.
I think it's not so much putting faith in WWE having long-term booking as recognizing that at some point they will feed Daniel Bryan to John Cena.
Maybe. I don't know. See, I'm not sure, because I know we're still kind of talking about Mark Henry and Cena and Bryan, but going into the Money in the Bank, they have Henry versus Cena, right?
Presumably,
so,
yes.
Does Bryan get put in Money in the Bank? Does he win Money in the Bank again and set it up that way, or?
I think it's quite possible that he's in the Money in the Bank match. So, yes, he definitely could win it.
I think Dean Ambrose is going to win Money in the Bank. One of the two.
I could see that. Mm. I mean, you know, Daniel Bryan could win it. Honestly, give it another month. Maybe Antonio Cesaro enters the conversation.
Why do they have to wait a month? I mean, they waited a week to put Jack Swagger in the chamber.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the briefcase, you know, it's kind of a shame we don't have Hulkamad on this show because he would go off on a tangent about this, but the briefcase is a guaranteed instant belt, and WWE has shown in the past that they don't give a shit about getting the guy over before he uses that. So really, anyone above Zack Ryder level could win it, and then could win the belt at any time. But I would think, you know, if you asked me to make a short list of guys who would make sense to win it, Daniel Bryan would definitely be on that list.
Mm-hmm. And they could probably pull it off better than what they did last time.
Probably.
Maybe they'll have him pin Mark Henry.
Maybe. That would be kind of cool. But, maybe. Well, we'll see.
I think Christian will win Money in the Bank returning at the pay-per-view.
Because he's back too, right?
Yeah, Christian returned tonight.
Yeah.
After being medically cleared forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which was actually rid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed to be Wade versus Axel on a rematch for the IC title. But then Vicky was like, no, you're going to face this guy. And it's Christian. And
yep.
The crowd popped really good for it.
Good. And he still has his terrible new music, which is a shame, but yeah. I've come to terms with that.
Terrible new music?
No, I just...
The male version of Just Close Your Eyes instead of the late version.
That's pretty good. I like it. It's okay.
It's a fine song on its own. It's just, I think it pales in comparison to the Waterproof Blonde version, so I dislike it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. MRT, do you have anything to say about this? You've been kind of quiet tonight.
I didn't see this segment.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it was a pretty good segment.
It was. Did you see the main event?
Yeah.
Well, then let's talk about the main event, because topic number four is Brock Lesnar.
Speaking of big penises.
Oh, God, this is going to be the segue all night. Brock Lesnar returned after the main event match tonight. He stared down CM Punk and grabbed a microphone, and he looked like he was going to say something, but he's Brock Lesnar. He doesn't talk. He destroys people. So he destroyed CM Punk with an F5. And it looks for all the world as if CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar is a thing. What do we think of that?
I think a lot of people kind of predicted this feud happening.
Yeah.
Like, people were like, oh, they got to do Punk versus Brock. They got to do Punk versus Brock. It has to happen. It has to happen.
I think it makes perfectly logical sense because CM Punk is a face and Paul Heyman is a heel, and so Heyman probably feels betrayed or something by CM Punk and has decided to sick his monster on Punk to teach Punk a lesson.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Either Punk is going to be taught his lesson and Lesnar is going to go on to bigger and more Undertaker-y things, or Punk is not going to learn his lesson and he's going to win. Either one of those would probably be good. I think a Punk-Lesnar match or series of matches would be really good, and honestly, I'm kind of excited for Punk-Heyman promos. I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
I think it's good for a summer angle.
Yeah.
Will probably mark the first pay-per-view with a main event that doesn't have Triple H or John Cena in some time. Or The Rock.
Does it happen at Money in the Bank, or do they put it off to SummerSlam?
Ooh,
I think it's booking for SummerSlam.
Maybe.
I was going to say that.
Money in the Bank's 3 weeks away.
That's true. So do you think Punk is just going to be in a Money in the Bank match? Like, what does he do at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view if he isn't fighting Brock Lesnar?
I know some people were thinking, like, Punk versus RVD as another Heyman man.
That would be an ugly match.
I don't think that's gonna, that would necessitate RVD being a heel, which RVD pretty much can't do.
Do they need to be a heel?
I actually think that they're gonna give one of the briefcases Rob Van Dam.
Oh god, no, please don't.
I don't see that. I mean, I get that they're hyping up his return, but I disagree.
He's definitely going to be in the Money in the Bank.
Absolutely. He's going to be in one of the matches, and he's probably going to have a big spot. But I don't think there's any way he wins one of the briefcases.
Okay, how about we predict which two guys we think are getting briefcases?
Oh, God. Do we think it's definitely two?
I think it might be two. It's definitely two. Okay. I don't think they're going to do one briefcase because they have two belts.
They have two belts, but they don't have two shows anymore.
Yeah, but they haven't had two shows in a long time.
That's true. They didn't have two shows last year, and they still did two Monies in the Bank. So I will say, you know, if I have to make a prediction, which I guess I do, that the Money in the Bank contracts will go to Daniel Bryan and Sheamus.
Hmm. What do you think, Gripster?
I think maybe... Crap. Maybe... Who are they lining up? I think they put... Jericho might be in it, and I think Sheamus and Sandow will be in it. I don't think Sheamus needs Money in the Bank, so I don't think he would get it. But
keep in mind that John Cena didn't need a Money in the Bank, and he got one.
Yeah.
Kane didn't need a Money in the Bank, and he got one.
I think Cesaro might get one.
That makes sense.
And I think Cesaro, I don't think Daniel Bryan might get one, but he could, so I guess Bryan and Cesaro.
Okay. MRT, what about you?
Orton and Cesaro.
Orton and Cesaro. You talk about guys who don't need a Money in the Bank, and Randy Orton is pretty much at the top of that list.
What do you mean? What does it mean to not need a Money in the Bank?
I guess it's like...
They're above it.
I shouldn't put words in KFG's mouth, because he's the one who said it, so why don't you take that one, KFG?
I guess, because I was going to say, like, Cena, but, like you said, Cena's already had the Money in the Bank, and that was all, like, main event dudes who don't need the Money in the Bank in a Money in the Bank match. Because, I mean, Jericho doesn't really need it, because he's Jericho. And he's already kind of, like, the main event area. But I still see it as a thing where you don't need a money, you don't need to give the Money in the Bank thing to a guy that's in, like, the main event already.
Yeah, I see that. There are guys who are one promo or one World's Strongest Slam on John Cena, for example, away from being taken seriously as main event players. And those are guys who wouldn't need it, so to speak. Whereas a guy like Daniel Bryan isn't quite at that main event level right now, where he needs something to kind of give him that little extra push. And cashing in the Money in the Bank out of nowhere would do that. You know? You think back to January 2006 when Edge did it. Edge wasn't an accepted main event player when he cashed in the Money in the Bank, but as soon as he did, he was. And he pretty much stayed there. And you know,
rising star
Kane.
Well, yeah, I'm saying there
has rising star John Cena.
We just talked about this. There have been cases where guys who didn't need the briefcase got the briefcase. And I think they've done so many Money in the Bank matches that it's okay to give one to an established main eventer, which is why I said Sheamus. You know, Sheamus doesn't need a Money
Sheamus
in the Bank.
Sheamus is a babyface.
Yeah, Sheamus doesn't need a Money in the Bank to be in the main event, but I think he's going to get one. Sheamus largely because he doesn't have anything to do.
Sheamus is a baby.
Daniel Bryan is a babyface.
Might win it.
Who do you think will win it?
I think that the two winners for the two briefcases are going to be Dean Ambrose and Christian. I think they're going to try giving Christian another run at the top.
Okay.
He's been gone from TV long enough that the TNA-itis has worn off on him. And I think that they want to try a new dynamic with the Shield. Giving a unit like that, the Money in the Bank, might put a new spin on the threat of Money in the Bank.
Okay.
I can see that, too.
Are you suggesting that they would Freebird rule the Money in the Bank briefcase?
I don't think they would Freebird rule it, but the fact that they're a stable and probably WWE's best booked stable since Evolution, that they'd probably be the only legitimate threat that could contain it. Ambrose is very obviously the leader in this group, and I think just being flanked by Rollins and Reigns, the second their music hits, the crowd's going to go crazy. They're already expecting run-ins any time now without the briefcase. With it, I think the champion and storyline is always in danger, no matter what situation he's in.
That's true. I mean, there hasn't really been a case where the holder of the money in the bank can by himself always create a championship opportunity. It's always been someone else has laid the champion out. I'm going to sneak in and capitalize. If the Shield gets it, if it's Ambrose or Rollins or Reigns, it doesn't matter which one. If the Shield gets it, it's just a matter of, hey, do you want to become champion tonight? Okay, let's go do it. You know? I totally see where you're coming from, and that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I could see them getting it along with Orton, but Orton has to get it, because after Daniel Bryan beats John Cena for the title at SummerSlam, Randy Orton's going to punt him and take the belt.
That would make a ton of sense, actually. That would be
that
great. That would be
entertaining. Would all three members of the Shield be in one Money in the Bank match?
Possibly.
I think so.
That would actually be really cool. That would be cool.
That would be a good way tease a little dissension, too.
It'd be a way to make it so that the Shield is like, it's everyone versus the Shield instead of just everybody against each other. And it could some really good match chemistry, I think.
Do you think then the Shield is going to turn babyface first?
I think Reigns.
I think it depends on if the Shield exiles Rollins or if Reigns breaks out.
True. I mean, the most that I think could happen at the moment is like Seth becomes like a Justin Gabriel kind of face.
Ugh.
And I know that's not what people want, but I mean, honestly, that's all I kind of really see. That or a mid-carder that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, you know what? Now I'm thinking about it. They could do the six teams that have been, the six guys that have been wrestling each other in one Money in the Bank.
Orton, Kane, Bryan, and the Shield in a Money in the Bank match?
Yeah, just by themselves for the WWE title.
That would be a good match.
That would probably be a really good match, yes. Are we still talking about CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, or should we go
to
topic number
five?
I think we've cleared all the ground we can on that.
This already felt like the next topic, so.
Alright, our next topic is a question from Strenuous Manflurry. He asks, what are some lower profile, like, what if scenarios that were derailed by injury as opposed to bad booking or politics? And the example he throws out is like, what if Edge hadn't torn his Achilles back in July of 2009, I believe it was, when he was just teaming up with Chris Jericho? What would have happened if they had stayed together for a while and really had a good run with the tag team titles? You know, let's explore that or maybe some similar scenarios.
I think you would just see the same path that Jericho and Big Show were on, with just Ed Sloan and the Big Show role, with them ultimately losing to DX in December. I don't think anything really changes in that scenario. I think they just wanted two main eventer heels to occupy that slot to give the tag titles a little bit of a push.
Yeah, I would say that. I think I was really disappointed at the time when Edge hurt his Achilles. And I was not buying Big Show at the time, like when Jericho first introduced him as his partner. But Jericho quickly became, you know, Jericho and then Show Miz, for that matter, were both really fun tag teams. Yeah. So it's tough for me to say that something definitely would have been better than that, even though Edge was fantastic at that time.
I've got a good minor what-if scenario.
Okay.
What if Heath Slater beats up Justin Roberts during the initial Nexus attack, and Daniel Bryan never gets fired for 2 months?
That's a good question.
Yeah. I think he'd still be the workhorse like they wanted him to be probably originally before they had to put him out. And I think maybe they would have been in more matches.
They would have been.
They probably would have won more matches and he would have been in more matches. I definitely think the top three or four of the Nexus then would have definitely been,
think long term it hurts his career to be in that spot.
See, that's what my initial thought was, because then he'd be in that crappy stable. But maybe
it wouldn't have been a crappy stable if Daniel Bryan was in it.
No, yeah, I think he still would have been the fall guy.
It's possible,
for a lot of the matches.
I mean, part Carver's of the problem with the Nexus was, like,
there were so many sacks of crap there.
Were bad at wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could put Daniel Bryan and Justin Gabriel in a tag match, and it would have been really, really good. Or you could have done, you know, at the time Wade Barrett was really green, but he was still fine. You know,
I don't know if I'd go that far.
He was not bad.
He was pretty.
He was
bad.
A talker, and that's all he had going for him.
He was a talker, and he had some decent big man things, and he had a better finisher than he does now.
The Wasteland is such a bad finisher.
I have always disagreed.
The elbow is fine.
Like, the elbow's fine, but Wasteland was good.
No, it was always awkward looking, and it never had that oomph to it that other fireman carry moves have.
I like the FU more than the Wasteland.
Yeah.
I actually agree on that. I think the FU is a really good move.
I agree. Kung Fu Grip, tell us of the FU and how much you like it.
It's okay. Some are better than others, you know, whatever.
Dave Meltz really likes it. Speaking of people with big dicks.
Big
Dave. I thought we were still talking about...
Yeah, so...
Batista. What if Batista... And how about those times when everyone who had the SmackDown title kept getting injured?
Yeah.
Like, how different would that be?
What if Batista doesn't get injured? He probably holds the title a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably becomes...
Or like, what if Edge didn't get hurt, leading to Great Khali becoming champion?
Actually, I think Mark Henry beats Batista at the Royal Rumble that year.
Mark Henry becomes the World Heavyweight Champion?
Yeah, because they didn't have that many heels going for Batista, and I don't think they wanted Batista's reign to outlast John Cena's at the time. There's still a bit of pettiness there, I feel.
I think maybe they wanted two Cenas, and Batista was going to be in that role, maybe.
I think, for a long time they were trying to make Batista on the level of Cena.
Well, at first, Batista was bigger than Cena.
Batista has always been physically bigger than Cena.
At first, Batista was a bigger star than Cena.
Because he turned on Triple H and he beat Triple H all the time.
Yeah, and he was on
Batista
Raw.
Batista was the reason that WrestleMania 21 drew that big number. I don't want to say it wasn't at all Cena, but like, it was more Batista than it was Cena. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
I think it was also handicapped by the fact he was facing Bradshaw for the title.
It was all Bradshaw's fault.
It was. Bradshaw and being on SmackDown.
Yeah, but initially, you know, I mean, think about it. Batista was the bigger star.
He was.
And I love him more. And we all know how much I like John Cena.
Speaking of Batista, let's throw out a what if. What if heel Batista hadn't just quit the company at the end when he was fantastic?
WWE still doing 4.0s on Raw to this day.
Yeah. I think we'd get more of that heel. But did he have the title as that Batista?
He
or
did.
No?
Yeah.
He won the title at I don't remember if it was No Way Out.
No Way Out.
It was the February pay per view. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. He won the title at the February pay per view and then dropped it to Cena at WrestleMania and then quit. Might have had an Extreme Rules match after that.
They had two matches, one of which where John Cena just duct taped his feet together to beat him in the Last Man Standing match.
Yes, duct tape. Are you serious?
I
love that promo.
I think they could do the if Batista was still with them as the heel Batista, who's better than everybody, and I guess they could try to make it so that Cena, I guess, would take a break, or Batista might put him out, or because if Batista is the champion. And they need a face challenge. They could do CM Punk versus Batista, which I think they've always tried doing, but never really did it properly, I think.
Yeah, they did.
They had good matches.
They kind of half did it when Punk initially cashed in the Money in the Bank, but they never had a clean winner there because they wanted to keep the title on Punk, but they didn't want to put Punk over Batista.
Yeah, so, they could have definitely done something like that with the whole straight edge versus whatever Batista's
good
lifestyle.
Matches with Batista? Daniel Who? Bryan.
Daniel Bryan works well with big guys, it seems.
Daniel Bryan works well with everyone.
Well,
but yes, Daniel Bryan does work well with big guys, and those would have been really good matches.
Yeah, because like, imagine the Ryback versus Bryan match. Now imagine if they had Batista, who's actually a good big man.
Imagine how terrible a Batista Ryback match would be.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Daniel Bryan and Batista did have a really good match on Raw.
And that was during Bryan's whole jobber kind of like phase.
That was when he was on NXT. Anybody.
Where he couldn't be anybody, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone beat him left and right, and oh my god, finally, Bryan's gonna prove the world right. He can beat somebody, and it's gonna be Batista. And then Batista bite out of nowhere, I guess, or whatever. Batista bomb, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, Batista was really, really good.
That was probably gonna be a decent run if, Batista stayed around after that time.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Oh well, he had to go do MMA, and now he's a UFC heavyweight champion, right? Right?
He's a movie star, actually.
I don't follow MMA, that's what happened,
he's
right?
He's fighting Bobby Lashley in December.
Oh well, then they both must be superstars.
No, he's not.
That's the joke.
No, he's not fighting Bobby Lashley.
He's not?
That is he fighting Bob Sapp?
Is he fighting Bobby Lashley for the ROH title?
Unfortunately not.
Oh well.
I mean, unless something has changed, yeah. What are you talking about? Lashley is not going to be doing MMA in December.
It's going to be an ROH, damn it.
Oh,
right?
That's right. What am I thinking?
Hey, I've got one more hypothetical injury question. It's actually topic number 6, a question from Achilles Forever 6. He asks,
What's his avatar look like?
I have no idea. He asks, what if Lita didn't break her neck?
She would be women's champion.
What time would her break her neck have been broken?
I think it was that no DQ match against Trish Stratus where she did that dive.
Didn't she break it on the set of Dark Angel? Like doing a move on the TV show of all places?
What's that?
I know that happened to Savage.
We really should have done research.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
We should have done research for this match. We're talking about Lita and wait. I don't know where I was going to go with that. Probably somewhere terrible.
I'm sorry. I should have said, speaking of big assholes, Randy Savage.
I was going to say, because when you said she broke her neck, the first thing that came to mind was that match where she dived out and like crumpled in two.
That was horrible.
I'm pretty sure she continued that match, and I think she might have won.
She was... Wasn't she just fine after that?
Maybe, yeah,
like,
I don't...
What were the consequences of her breaking her neck? Like,
I don't remember. I was kind of hoping one of you guys did.
I thought her breaking her neck was earlier in her career before she took off as, like, the main, or the second main of the Diva division.
I mean, I guess she'd botch more moonsaults and be really popular and sell lots of thongs?
I mean, you could say, I guess, if Lita has a longer career, maybe WWE's Divas are in a better place now, but... Honestly, historically, I don't think Lita has that much significance.
No, I think her and Trish are definitely the things that revitalized the Divas division for that time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't think she was just good or anything, but yeah, I mean, she was important.
When people think Trish, people think Trish and then they think Lita probably right away as like the person that she had the best matches with.
So guys,
it's
kind
of like
think of
goes hand to hand.
Guys, yeah, he's not. When you think of Lita, what do you guys think of?
My first thought is that match she had with Stephanie McMahon on Raw.
I think of Edge.
I think of terrible moonsaults.
I think of Danny Doring proposing to her in ECW and using a condom as an engagement ring.
What?
She was in ECW as Miss Geniality, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And Angelica.
Yeah.
Angelica Congeniality. Great name.
Well, whatever. The idea was basically that she was the Lita that she was with Edge, but turned up to, like, more, I guess, to 11.
Here's a question. Is Lita the reason that no WWE diva has more than one name now? With the possible exception of AJ?
No, because Ivory and Jacqueline all preceded her.
At least
those were somewhat
so
interesting names.
What about Sable? What about Sunny?
Okay. They used to have interesting names.
What about Brock?
What happened? what happened was the Diva Search stuff, and the Diva Search thing was then neutering their real names and
the
taking
Diva
away their
Search
last names.
The Diva Search girls had names! Christy,
they didn't have last
Emmy,
names.
Ashley Massaro.
No, they just called her Ashley whenever they needed to, and Layla, what do they call her? She has a last name. They don't call her Layla L. They just call her Layla.
Every woman has a last name, and none of
Eve
them get
Torres?
Called
Torres? No,
it.
They just call her Eve sometimes. Sometimes they bust out Torres. I mean, whatever. Caitlin doesn't have a last name at all.
Nope.
AJ has Lee. Sometimes they use it, sometimes they don't.
It's just, that's probably my biggest pet peeve with the entire Divas division, is that they only have one name, and it's just some random stupid first name. It's like, how the hell are you supposed to get over if your name is Caitlin? Or, hey, look, it's Emma. I like Emma.
Yeah, yeah. I could never fall in love with someone named Emma.
Well, it's,
well,
if only we had passed the Equal Rights Amendment so that this travesty would be averted.
I think what it
equal
is
names equal names for equal work. Equal names for equal work. Equal names for equal work.
Imagine
what about Ryback?
Ryback's
very
Ryback is an Ryback. Interesting name.
Ryback's
Edge is an interesting
it.
Name.
What if there was a
Ryback
wrestler just named Greg?
Yeah. What if the WWE champion was John? I want to see John fight Daniel.
What happened was Daniel took
I
all the
I
kind of want to
see
names.
This.
John versus
this is awesome.
How about Randy? You got Randy in the main event. You got CM in the main event. You got Alberto.
Here's something interesting, guys.
What? Mm.
Now, the women are known by one name, but aren't the men really known by one name? Do we usually call him John Cena, or do we call him Cena? Do we call him
that's
Randy or
that's different.
Call
though.
Him Orton.
We call him. I think what the thing is, we call him by the thing that's distinctive about their names. Like, with Dolph Ziggler, you can either call him Dolph or Ziggler, because
right.
they're both
I mean,
distinctive
look at
names.
Mark Henry, though, he has two first names.
He does.
Yeah, but people mostly call him Henry, I think. Or they call him Mark
call
Henry.
Him Mark
because
Henry
but
though,
but that's just how you
just
refer to people. That's how you talk about people,
yeah.
especially when you're discussing them like calling a sporting event. You call them by their last name most of the time. But just
it's
having...
So would Craigslist Homo just be the homo?
What? No, Craigslist Homo would be the... yeah. Craigslist Homo. I was going to say, well, the thing that probably made it so that women only have one name is the whole Madonna idea. And anybody could be like Madonna or whatever.
Well, that makes sense when you have a
or
somewhat
Cher.
Interesting name like Sunny or like Sable or like Lita, but not
What's
so,
so
much
about Sunny
compared.
Oh,
to
Oh wow,
Caitlin,
she's the fucking
to Emma?
Raisin Bran mascot.
Because you had Sunny and Cher, so there's a Sunny there.
But there was no Cher in WWE.
That's I know. I'm just saying it's easy to get like a name that sounds goofy and hippie and or whatever. Over as Sunny. But whatever.
I just feel like only having one name, and especially with that one name being a generic first name, it just... I don't want to say it dehumanizes, but I can't think of a less controversial word. So yeah, it dehumanizes them a little bit.
I would
and
say
it,
what about Kelly Kelly?
It shows us their humanity because it reminds us of their first name.
Why can't we be reminded of their full name, to be reminded of the fullness of their personality?
Because a name, especially your last name, is something given to you before you're even born. It's something that just denotes your stupid family, while your first name is at least something given only to you.
Right.
It's something somewhat unique about you. It's not something you share with your brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. It's who you are. And so instead of just equating them with their lineage, we're making them their own people. We're letting them be independent. We're letting them blaze their own trail. Go forth, Caitlin, and blaze your own trail. Don't be bound to your father's name. I mean, would you want her to be bound by this patriarchal system of, taking your husband's name and thus passing it on to your daughter? I mean, it's not like Caitlyn's mother hyphenated, so otherwise you would just be passing on this patriarchal garbage. Instead, we're liberating her, and we're just calling her Caitlyn. We're letting her be her own person.
Do we spell Caitlyn with a Y here?
Caitlin does spell her last name.
Yes, it is.
She does spell her name with a Y. But maybe we should spell it with two Ys. How about that?
Here's, what if these are actually not their, just their first names? What if they're their, what if these are their last names?
So yeah, I think if Alita doesn't break her neck, we don't have this discussion.
Yeah.
Speaking of
pretty much.
And hey, speaking of wrestlers who only had one name, at least for part of his career, the wrestler of the week this week is X-Pac. What is your favorite memory of Sean Waltman, the 1-2-3 kid, X-Pac 6, 6-Pac, or the Kid, or the Lightning Kid, or is that all the names he had?
I like when Razor Ramon put him in a diaper.
With Jerry Lynn in Global, because those were pretty cool.
One of my earliest memories of watching wrestling back in the mid-90s was watching this scrawny little wrestler called the One... He probably wasn't even called the 1-2-3 Kid. It was watching Sean Waltman beat Razor Ramon and having it be this huge major upset. And that was a lot of fun. And honestly, that's probably my favorite X-Pac moment, just because for the longest time he wasn't actually that good.
No, he was actually a really good wrestler. I think he just gets a lot of crap though, because later in his career he got really lazy in the ring.
He knew what people
did you
like.
See him in Chikara?
Hey,
he was so
good.
He
had a good match with El Generico, so it's probably El Generico carrying him, but whatever. Anything after that is shit, though, for real. Like, everyone even that loves Chikara admits that everything else was shit after that.
Why are we talking about dead promotions?
Because, I mean, he was there. I was going to say, my favorite moment of X-Pac was when he ripped open his ass doing the Bronco Buster.
That's not funny.
Painful. It's funny and painful.
My favorite X-Pac moment was in early TNA pay-per-views when he used lots of homophobic slurs against Bruce. At least I assume that was him, because like everyone was fucking doing them on those awful shows we've been watching.
Everyone.
Fuck that company.
Gay community?
No, that was AJ Styles, not X-Pac.
The what community?
I'm trying to figure out a segue to talk about X-Factor, but there isn't one. Let's just talk about X-Factor. What the fuck was up with that?
I think they just wanted to do something with Justin Credible and Albert, and the Alliance hadn't formed yet, so they just threw them together since they had these guys.
How did that even start? Like, was there an angle that led to the formation of X-Factor, or were they just a team at one point?
They're just buddies
X-Pac
and pals.
Credible are pals in real life, and they were actually really close together back when they were in WWF in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah, they were like the B-League click guys. They were the guys who, basically, like, you know,
carried the bags.
Did that form out of the ashes of the Alliance?
No,
it
was
out of the ashes of DX.
That was before the Alliance.
Yeah, months before.
Oh yeah, that was, because they were together.
They were
around the time
17.
Okay, yeah. The one real strong X-Factor memory I have is that they were on the SmackDown that had the four-way TLC match, and I have that on VHS. And I've watched it a whole bunch of times. And
were
it's
they actually in that match?
That match is hard to watch now.
They were not in the four-way TLC match, but they were on the show, and right after the promo that sets up the match, the next thing you hear is, "Yo, you're dealing with the X-Factor! I got everything I ever wanted!" and so on. And
I remember, I think Albert, I think was the only one to hold the title in that stable.
I think he
had the European title or something.
No, he was the Intercontinental title. At that. He feuded with Kane for it.
Yeah, and Kane did a Hurricanrana
with
him.
Yep. They actually had pretty decent big man matches.
Hurricanrana, you say?
Yep.
The Hurricanrana
for the Intercontinental title. Shout out to CRZ.
Fuck. Actually, you know, maybe my favorite X-Pac moment for real was... Oh, wait, no, it wasn't that moment, because I was thinking of when he dressed up as Mizark in blackface in a giant fat suit. Oh, Jesus
racist
Christ.
And fat shaming.
let's see, what did...
Was X-Pac in the DX reunion at Raw 1000?
Yes.
Yeah, everybody was, except for China.
Paul was the only one on there.
Was that the only time X-Pac and Shawn Michaels were in the ring together as part of DX?
Yes, as DX. They were together as NWO.
Yeah, they were in the NWO, but they were never in DX together.
The Hall of Fame and that moment were the only times, I believe.
Okay. I don't remember if they made note of that. I want to say Shawn turned to him and said, "Who the hell are you?" But I might just be wish-casting that.
They're in the clique, so he knows who he is.
Well, yeah, but the joke is that they weren't in DX together, so Shawn would have no idea who he is.
My favorite Shawn Michaels.
That's a funny joke. Ha 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 ha.
Hey, shut up.
I liked when Shawn Michaels superkicked Mike Knox, then immediately asked who he was.
That was pretty funny. Oh,
it's true.
He's Aces X-Pac and Eights member Knox.
Knox with two X's or
Mike. Knox on
For
house
a brief
those.
Second, I thought you were saying that X-Pac was an Aces and Eights member, and the worst thing is that I totally believed it.
I think
he's X-Pac. The treasurer. Oh wait, no, they probably already have that. He's the CFO.
I think they actually might have a CFO.
Oh God! Do they have a COO?
Maybe. I don't know. They have a bunch of stuff. It doesn't
Eric
matter.
Bischoff's going to be revealed as the Supreme Leader anyway.
Speaking of big dicks.
Wait, is Big Dick what? Johnson in Aces and Eights?
Actually,
no,
I think you're right.
We should go to, the feud of the week, which is,
Big Dick Dudley versus Big Dick Johnson.
No, it is
yeah.
not. But it is time for the feud of the week. And I actually wanted to ask if you guys had sneaked at my notepad file, because the feud of the week is John Cena versus the Nexus.
Wow.
We talked about what might have been with this angle. Let's talk about what was. And what was...
How about John Cena's
okay,
let's
talk about the
idiots.
Positives first. Can we talk about the positives, please, just once first?
Okay, we can talk about the positives.
The debut of the
one,
Nexus was the best thing that has happened on WWE TV in at least 5 years. The single best thing.
Brock Lesnar returning.
Nope. The debut of the Nexus was better.
No, pretty sure Brock Lesnar was pretty much better. Because John Cena got beat up again.
John Cena got beat up worse by the Nexus. There were 8 guys beating up John Cena. And beating up anything else in their path and destroying everything.
There were definitely better things in the last 5 years.
Like what?
Shawn Michaels' retirement?
Did that happen?
That was great.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. But that wasn't a wrestling angle.
Maybe the Ric Flair retirement?
The Ric Flair retirement was super fantastic and great. But that also was not a wrestling angle.
Oh,
what? Money the Bank being
the original built for Cena.
The Mark Henry retirement angle.
Yes. Ooh, that was great, but no, Nexus was better. I'm just talking about that one angle.
Okay, fine. Well, let me talk about another positive of that. The positive that CeCe and myself and probably some other cynical jerks pointed out that in the second week that the angle was ruined because they got chased off like geeks.
They
probably wouldn't be able to salvage it after that point.
And
everyone was like, no, you guys, you just have to, like, see where this is going. This isn't you're just being stupid. This isn't ruined. It's only the second week. How can you say that? And we were totally fucking right.
You were totally
fucking
right.
I like how Mark Henry outran some of the Nexus guys in
awesome.
That segment. Mark Henry always is awesome. I think that the first night was pretty cool. Then Brian got fired, and then they didn't know what the fuck to do anymore.
Yeah.
So they're like, and they had that one night where they had the stare down with John Cena's group of stupid idiots, and they brawled.
And then they
actually got the crowd. Well, that was different. Like, it's the stupid idiots, and that was actually with some of the guys that mattered, I guess. I don't know. But the freaking crowd loved it, and the crowd was going crazy. And it seemed awesome was the crowd was going nuts and the crowd camera was shaking. But then you're like, oh wait, it's the group of stupid fucking idiots.
Why are you
laughing about?
Hashtag poor Vicky. Hashtag
oh, God, Zeke.
Rockstar versus wrestler. Hashtag,
That reminds me of Zeke joining the core, which was basically the Nexus shit.
That was pretty terrible.
Or the core was even worse. Remember those fucking horrible shirts?
The core.
Remember how people liked the core at first?
I don't think anybody liked the core, honestly.
No, there were definitely people who called the core with two R's. Liked the core.
They just had the boner for Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, and Wade Barrett. That's why they liked it.
Anyone ever bought a core t-shirt?
Oh God, no! I don't hope. I think the actual core themselves bought their own t-shirts.
They signed one of those contracts where they have to buy back all the unsold inventory, so Ezekiel Jackson is just eating cold t-shirts right now.
I loved about the first season of NXT. The best thing about the first season of NXT to derail here for a bit was the challenges they had to do each week, which apparently were a shoot. And one of the challenges was as many t-shirts to the crowd as he could, and Daniel Bryan, instead of just selling them, throws all the shirts into the crowd, starts giving money away, and denounces capitalism. That was an awesome moment.
I like capitalism, so that sounds pretty bad.
I do not like capitalism, so that was funny.
So here are some things I liked about that angle. I actually liked John Cena's team. I thought his team was kind of cool, especially the final team, which I don't think had Kali in it.
No, it did not.
Yeah, because Brian...
I like that Bret Hart was competing in it, but it's too bad it got him kicked out of Lloyd's of London.
Like, yeah, because, I mean, the team kind of made sense. I mean, you had, like, guys who were all, like, attacked by the Nexus and were getting their revenge. But apparently, like, John Cena is a big fucking jerk who never helps anyone out and doesn't care about people. So, you know, he didn't know that. So let's just make fun of his team, even though the team made total sense and was lots of world champions and shit like that.
Well, it also had the great Kali and crippled old man Bret Hart.
Well, yeah, but in storyline, Bret Hart isn't a crippled old man. He's
I understand that. I think
now here's a question, Raptor. And wait, Raptor, I have a question for you.
Wait, I have to say something before you ask that question. And just to prove that that team was a good idea, they won.
And Daniel Bryan came back. Yeah, that was also
okay.
A
you
good
can ask your question.
Yeah, my question to you, Master Raptor. What if Bryan just joins the team, but at the end turns on Team WWE, rejoins the Nexus, and Team Nexus wins decisively?
Angle becomes even more convoluted and fucked up, and Daniel Bryan is ruined. The angle was beyond salvaging at that point.
You think so?
They turn Miz face and Miz does a I told you so gimmick the whole time. Because the whole thing was that Miz wanted to be on the team, but Cena was like, no, fuck you, Miz, you suck.
Well, it was Miz wants the glory of everyone crawling to him desperate, and Cena was like, hey, fuck you, dude, you're not that important, we got Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, but if he actually said, hey, fuck you, dude, you suck, that's just another example of... John Cena being correct about things, because we discovered that The Miz does suck.
I don't know. God, that match sucked.
It would have been better to go into that main event run for WrestleMania 27 besides The Miz. Who would be a good
Batista.
Foil for John Cena for that summer?
I mean, Batista. Given the angle, just put the belt on The Rock. With the angle, nobody would have been better.
Batista.
I mean, maybe Batista, but nobody would have gotten over with that.
I don't think Batista was in the company at the time.
Well, yeah, but...
He was.
Who cares? Batista.
Oh, God, you know what? I remembered the freaking how John Cena lost that I'm fired match or whatever, or he got fired, and then he's like, I'm taking my day off, I'll go to kiss my wife and say hi to my mother and my father and my brother and my friends from who came home from Iraq, and then he shows
up.
He was
on Raw the next week.
Yeah.
The next day.
I think he interfered in the main event on that show, even.
But he was still
in
the house
show.
Doing
the
title. And he's still doing, he was on the house show still doing the Juan Cena.
Oh, God.
I kind of like the idea that, like, now that Cena's fired, the rules don't apply to him, and, like, no one's going to help out the Nexus because they've been such jerks, so they're not going to enforce the rules on Cena anyway. But they even, like, blew that off too quickly and reinstated him within, like, 3 weeks.
Yep.
So it was, like, something unique and kind of cool. No, it's gone.
No. What Cena needs to have a match on the pay-per-view.
It also kind of killed any future loser will be fired sips for any match that Cena's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kinda.
Or just in general.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost three of those.
Barrett should have fucking made him wear the shirt a lot earlier than goddamn
yes.
feud.
Yes, 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 yes. He should have had to wear the shirt. He should have had to wear the armband. He should have had to keep the tag team titles and keep winning. But no.
God, that was so fucking stupid.
It was. And he shouldn't have fucking laid down.
And then he killed Michael Tarver. Stiffed him.
Angle was so terrible. Then Michael Tarver went insane. Michael Tarver was always insane.
He was always insane.
God, there were so many shitty wrestlers in the Nexus.
He held
down
Michael Tarver.
Remember when Michael Tarver said, I am, or no, wait, what he said, of course, I am Michael Tarver.
It's me, Michael Tarver.
I do not remember when he said that.
No.
He never said it.
He that press conference, and he was like, of course, I am Michael Tarver.
I will take your word for that.
Funny story, that it's me and Michael Tarver meme never fucking happened.
Never said it. No. I think he just said, I am, or something like that. Let's move on to topic number 9. It's a question from Rodney the Piper, who, before you ask MRT, has no avatar and text that reads, goodbye, Cena.
I should buy him an avatar.
And he'll say, fuck you. Because he said, fuck you, I'll never get an avatar, I think, too.
I could buy him one. What kind of avatar should I get?
Okay.
You should buy him an avatar of the answer to the question he asks, because the question is, of all the various figures in wrestling who have received extended or even over-the-top hatred from the Punch Sport Pagoda, what was your favorite example of that just hatred? What was your favorite example of PSP piling on a guy?
With their hate?
Yes.
Do I mean this, like, ironically, or just, like, actually enjoying people hating someone? Because I'm a positive person, and I don't like hatred.
Take it whichever way you want, man.
Do you mean, like, randomly just hating them, or just, like, constant hate?
Random hate, constant hate. I think my hatred of Randy Orton is at least eligible for the question, but probably not. It's not the best example.
I think other people seem to hate Orton, too, somewhat.
My personal example is your hatred of Mike Quackenbush, and maybe he just wants us to rant on Mike Quackenbush.
No, a decent amount of people are getting tired of Quackenbush's shit.
I don't hate any wrestlers like him, I just don't watch them.
I kinda hate Austin Aries.
Austin Aries is a very hateable man. It's very easy to hate.
He's gonna listen to this and write you a nasty private message, Mass Raptor.
Oh shit, you know what's a big, big problem now?
What?
He might be able to figure out what my Twitter handle is and block me on Twitter, but he's really stupid, so he might not be able to figure that out.
Oh no. No one should block @mongo_ebooks.
You know, that probably just by default makes them the worst PSP poster.
Well, the worst person who is a poster maybe, but not the worst at posting.
So, hatred, I don't know, I think that people's hatred of John Cena is really stupid and makes me laugh.
It really is dumb.
Kind of tired now. Like, it's like, holy shit, it's been how long?
I think they confuse frustration with hatred just because they want someone new in the main event scene.
There's some, like, fucking hatred. Well, I mean, not so much anymore, but, like, the fucking hatred he got for a long time when he was one of the best wrestlers in North America was, like, hilarious. Just people, like, claiming that he's bad at everything.
I would say it's a lot better in PSP than it is in general on the internet.
Yeah, I guess that isn't random, but I don't know. Like, who give me some examples of people who have been randomly hated.
I don't know. Does Chris Benoit count for this topic?
No.
I don't think there's anything random about that.
Well, no, it's not random, and I'm not saying that the question is random. Like, he doesn't say random.
Who are some people that PSP has hated that I would enjoy the hatred of?
I mean...
Big Show?
No, because that's another one that pisses me off, because the Big Show's really good.
The Big Show has been really good for a really long time.
People randomly hating Sheamus? For some reason.
Yeah, that one really annoys me too. I fucking hate the people who hate Sheamus.
Sheamus is really
like,
good.
They say Sheamus, oh, he's Triple H's fucking buddy, and he sucks. He's just like John Cena. Ooh, He's a terrible wrestler.
There's two that I hate. Give me more things that I hate.
How about The Miz?
Feed me more. The Miz hate is understandable, I think.
No, The Miz hate is over the top and stupid.
It's understandable to a degree where it's like, shut up, Miz, you suck, but...
I think I like him at the level he's at now, where he's just fucking around in the mid-card. I don't like it when he peeks his head out in the main event, though.
Yeah. I'd say that's fair. I think... Here is my official definitive opinion on The Miz. The Miz is a competent, charismatic wrestler who is miscast as a face and who has a really nice backstory that makes me like him.
Huh, wait, what's his backstory?
He
was a casual wrestling fan, and after other things didn't work out for him, became a wrestler?
And was faced with a lot of, oh, you can't do it, you're never going to make it. And
they were right!
He did it! He made it!
He won tough enough.
He's bad.
He's not bad. He is bad at times. But he's not...
If you ever get back in this locker room, I'm gonna fucking kill my family.
And then he did it anyway, and Miz was like, so can I come in, or what?
I think I was implying that she was allowed back.
I want to just, like, insert a gif here of Miz attempting figure four for the first time.
For the first time, it was terrible. And sometimes he botches it, and it's bad that he has it. But sometimes he does it perfectly fine, and people are still like, oh, there's Miz with his shitty figure four. Rah, rah, rah.
But then he also does commentary, and he's so bad at commentary. Like, tonight, he was just so irritating. Like, just the way he would describe Curtis Axel as the Intercontinental Champion, he just, the way he would... describe him as champion and just pronounce the words and always like called him the Intercontinental Champion in his Miz voice. It was so bad, and he's so bad when he announces on main event, and he's just so bad at everything. And I kind of feel bad that for even to this day, I'll say that he was better than John Morrison just because I don't want to admit that I was wrong about that.
He was better than John Morrison.
I don't know.
Morrison's probably better in the ring a little bit.
That's why we talked about this last week, and I said, is it a wrestling match or a promo, or is it everything? Because if it's just a wrestling match, then yeah, John Morrison is better than The Miz. John Morrison could walk into WWE off the street and be better than The Miz, but The Miz is a better wrestler than John Morrison. He's better at everything a wrestler does.
He's so bad.
I think they're about on the level.
Did you know that Miz is like the announcer that's always on main event, the TV show?
I do not watch main event.
It's him and Cole.
I don't get the channel for it.
I have it on two channels. So if you get it, then whatever. But the fact is, him and Cole are commentators. Then sometimes it's Cole JBL, but now it's Miz, fucking Josh Matthews and Ricardo as a commentator team.
The Miz, Josh Matthews, and Ricardo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, God.
That does not sound good.
They actually call the matches pretty decently, interact okay, but Ricardo still was in, like, the Spanish-speaking gimmick stuff. Because, I mean, people know he speaks English, so it was weird. But,
so is he just like Carlos Cabrera on English commentary?
When he speaks the commentary and he calls the moves, but when he gets excited, he turns the switch on the Spanish mode, and Miz is like, oh, what are you saying now? Everyone points out, oh, you're speaking Spanish, I don't understand it, when he does it. But whatever. Miz, yeah, I can see Miz hate for a reason.
Yeah, I think Miz Hate is pretty justified. He's really bad at lots of things.
All right, so you should buy Rodney the Piper an Avatar of the Miz.
Remember when you should
buy him my old Avatar of the Miz.
I don't remember what your avatar is, nor do I care to remember
what about
that.
I was going to say, one more hate. I think the hate for...
R-Truth is really silly.
R-Truth sucks.
No, I think R-Truth is fine as a mid-card when he's over, and he can kind of do some promo. Doesn't make any sense, but the fans get into it.
What about the hate for Kofi?
Yeah, that's really
Kofi hate is stupid.
That came out of nowhere recently, I thought. I mean, I understand saying how he's sloppy.
Oh, what about the hate for Rey Mysterio?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's just racism.
That was, okay, That was by far my either least favorite or favorite hate in this fucking forum, and I hate everyone who hated Rey Mysterio or still hates Rey Mysterio. Especially the ones who are on the Rey injures people bandwagon. You're all bad posters on the level of a few posters who are really bad and like TNA.
Okay, so you should buy Rodney the Piper an avatar of Rey Mysterio being awesome.
No, I'll get him an avatar of
Shield.
Of the X-Bone, because the X-Bone is awesome.
Okay.
And I like Rodney the Piper.
Our final topic comes from Blue Army Man, who has no avatar and text that reads Huluvu. He asks, what gimmick match would you like to see make a return? And before you say War Games, don't say War Games, because everyone says War Games.
Coal Miner's Glove on a Pole.
I wasn't going to say War Games.
Good. I wasn't going to say War Games either, but that's what he said. He said, don't say War Games.
Elimination Chamber, six-man elimination tag.
That doesn't count because it has never actually existed. It's just in video games.
It's War Games.
Now, that would be a cool match.
There's
but
honestly no gimmick match.
That'd be
that
a good way to do Shield.
That's what they were probably apparently were going to do with the Sheamus Cena thing. But, no. Yeah. There's really no gimmick that WWE does or doesn't do anymore.
There's no good gimmick match that they haven't done in a while. And I say that as a fan of the Scramble match.
Barbed wire steel cage match.
Barbed wire steel cage match? No. That was a dumb fucking match.
What's the point of that? What's the difference?
Nothing. It's blood. It's for the blood to eat.
Okay. So.
And there wasn't really anything else except for, oh, hey, Big Show finally has JBL in the corner. And JBL can't escape, so what's he gonna do? And what he does is he gets chokeslammed through the ring, and then he escapes at the bottom and wins that way.
Maybe feel like most stiffs are made just so WWE doesn't have to beat a guy, because every stiff they do, there's always a screwy finish or a, well, that didn't count, because almost every stiff, unless it's a straight one-on-one match, they're done just so they don't have to put someone over the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're obsessed with lateral booking. I know that's the mentality there. I know that's what they do, but I don't understand it.
Neither do I.
Maybe, so say for teams, maybe elimination tag. So there's multiple table spots, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think they can do table matches with tag teams, though, since they don't have the Dudleys.
They don't have tag teams?
Well, yeah, the last table tag team match they had was the Luchadors, Sin Cara, and Rey Mysterio versus
the Road Scholars.
Yeah, and that only had one table person go through the table, and I think.
That was that Extreme Rules last year? Or was that TLC in December? Or
TLC in December, because Road Scholars aren't that old as a team.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because Big Show versus Cody was in the table match where Big Show stepped through the table.
Yeah, that's right.
That counted for some reason.
Amazing finish.
Well, maybe like not scramble matches, but multi-man like matches, like how the Cruiserweights used to do it, where they had like eight dudes in a match or something, or maybe
that was always like a 16-minute match where there were eight dudes, so every fall happened after like 3 minutes and nobody looked good.
What about Tag Team Turmoils, which is basically like a Tag Team Gauntlet match?
Yeah, or like
tag teams.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess good gauntlet matches, maybe? I don't know, like one that isn't just one dude versus this group of guys, but like one dude wins, one dude, other guy wins, because that happens on the indies a lot. I mean, it happens on ROH.
They haven't had those since like 2005, yeah. That's been a while since we've seen that one. But there's not really that many stiffs they haven't brought back into regular rotation. I guess we could see women in more, not violent, but stiff. It matches like another women's no DQ match or another women's cage match could be done. Like,
yeah.
If you just want to ramp up the intensity between the AJ and Caitlyn feud.
Yeah, I was
apparently
going.
They were really bothered by Gail Kim and Taryn match getting a good rating, or good reviews rather. So I wonder if there's more pressure on the women to perform better in matches.
Well, having
I don't think
women
they know or care about that.
Well, yeah. It was apparently, the women's match was apparently the best match
on
that pay-per-view. Yeah, he said it was because it was the best match on the pay-per-view, and it was a women's match, and it was the last women's standing match, and it, like, did almost, it was, like, rivaled Kurt Angle and AJ Styles match as the best match on the show. And I think that's maybe why they were, like, freaked out a little, because, oh, well, women are having almost as a good match as Kurt Angle. Uh-oh. I don't know.
Well, if that's true, and it finally motivates WWE to actually have decent women's matches, and putting the title on AJ is at least a good start, fine.
You know what I would like to see?
What would you like to see?
An empty arena match.
For the love of God, why?
Oh, they have those every Friday, though.
Oh, snap. But seriously, for the love of God, why?
I thought Impact's on Thursdays.
Counterburn. But seriously,
you want to know something funny about the upcoming Impact tapings that are going to be the Destination X episode?
What's that?
They're already papering it, and tickets haven't gone on sale yet.
Wow.
They did a house show in the same state, and if you entered a code when you bought your tickets, you got free tickets to the Impact taping, too.
Oh, cool. Now, seriously, wow. I don't want to get away from this because it stuns me that you say this. Why do you want to see another empty arena match?
It's a gimmick that's almost never used, and I think it has a kind of a cool atmosphere when it's, you know, done right. It's different, and there's very few things in wrestling that are different anymore.
Ryback and Cena could have a good one.
If you cast it in the same mold as the Mankind and Rock empty arena match, maybe. But I mean, that was basically a comedy match. And WWE doesn't do comedy main event matches anymore. With the notable exception of Michael Cole shitting all over the ambulance match Sunday.
Ambulance match.
Oh, God, yeah, when he's actually fucking laughing.
Any push over the line or push in a door match just absolutely fucking sucks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, that was the most entertaining ambulance match in a long time. But it was also basically entirely because of the commentary and because Cole was not selling it as a serious thing.
Yeah, I mean,
we haven't had a first blood match in a while.
Well, obviously that's not going to happen, and I hate those. But, I mean, why wouldn't you want to see an empty arena match? I mean, there have been, like, so few in history that I can name three.
I would really see one.
I mean,
actually, I guess I can name four because TNA did a fucking shitty one with Sting and Kurt Angle. But
wasn't that the one where they told the crowd to actually leave instead of just taping it on the empty day?
Yeah. I mean, other than that, I can think of The Rock and Mankind, Funk and Lawler, and Aries versus Samoa Joe in ROH, where they had a match in the ROH school.
That sounds kind of goofy.
Okay, here's my piece on the empty arena match. I would watch one, but I don't think I would buy it as a serious match.
Why not?
It's just, it obviously, because there's no crowd, there's no atmosphere, and without the crowd there to get into it, it's really hard to create that drama, I guess.
WCW and AWA do a series of empty arena matches, like, just in a studio.
Well, AWA, in its last day, started taping in a small studio. I think there was a small crowd there, though.
Really? I just remember them wrestling, like, in an empty pink room.
I think there were people there. I don't really remember.
What about...
It was for the Turkey Bowl or something like that.
Oh, well, that was shit. What about parking lot brawls?
I don't really have any interest in seeing that.
I saw one in Edison, but then cops almost shut the ROH show down.
And, like, this wasn't exactly an empty arena match, but there was the match between, Owen Hart and Ken Shamrock in the dungeon.
The Lion's Den match?
Not the Lion's Den, the one in the dungeon.
In the dungeon, okay.
That was, you know, kind of cool.
Well, they can't really do that.
I was actually thinking of the Lion's Den match, but I don't think I actually want to see that come back.
I'm in general in favor of matches happening in strange places. So, how about, this is going to get laughed at, bring back the 24/7 rule. You know, if you're going to have the United States title and the Intercontinental title, have the Intercontinental title be contested under 24/7 rules.
Why not just bring back the hardcore title?
Or do that.
How about... How about real hardcore title, like hardcore kind of like matches that go actually out into like the backstage and shit and might actually finish back there instead of just coming back out to the ringside?
It's hard to do legitimate hardcore matches in a PG environment, but if they could do some kind of falls count anywhere thing.
I don't think so, because WCW was able to do it perfectly fine in the 90s.
WCW was not able to do anything perfectly fine ever.
And those were like comedy matches, like any match that goes backstage.
Isn't that what we're talking about now?
Yeah, I guess I'd want more matches that maybe like spill to the backstage area and kind of stay back there for a little bit instead of just, oh, here we go, we're coming back out here, and now we're going to finish it in the ring. It's kind of weird, like, they do that. Like, why would you need to? I mean,
the wrestling arena is set up so that everyone can see the ring.
I know from, like, an obvious reason, but, like, from, like, a wrestling kind of sense, you're watching the show and, like, you're thinking, oh, these guys are going to brawl all over the place. So would you think the ring would be the last place they finish at? Like, I don't think...
It's a arena, it's a fighting surface designed for maximum fighting potential. It's been crafted over 100 years to best suit the needs of wrestlers. Why wouldn't you want to fight in it?
The man has a point.
I was like, the last match I can think of that finished backstage was the Rio versus CM Punk, I think, which was the last man standing. Or was it John Cena versus Del Rio that was last man standing and CM Punk attacked?
I think that was
Cena
versus Del Rio. Yeah, that was the one.
And Punk attacked him.
No, it was the other way around, because Del Rio attacked them. It was Punk and Cena having a last man standing match. Del Rio attacked them after he got out of his limousine. That's right.
No, because I'm pretty sure that was when Heyman drove off with Punk.
Was it?
Guys.
I can't remember. Who cares?
Imagine if we had more empty arena matches, which could then end with pinfalls backstage.
If they do an empty arena... Okay, I don't want to see an empty arena match as a main event, because I don't want to see main event matches that are also comedy matches.
I don't think I would pay a pay-per-view.
It doesn't have to be a comedy match.
I don't believe that to be true.
Submissions match in a long time.
Do you think Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler were out there telling jokes to each other in Memphis?
I think that was a different time.
It's because there's different wrestlers, and the whole idea was that Rock and McFoley are goofy kind of wrestlers and also charismatic. And
have the halftime of the Super Bowl, and they need to keep people entertained.
Mick Foley didn't actually want the match to come across as goofy and comedic. It just happened to, and he was kind of disappointed that it did.
I thought Foley was totally fine with it until the final shot.
I don't think he liked pop. He thought the popcorn shot, I think, was goofy too.
Oh, well.
I don't know. But yes, submission
matches. What about submissions matches, though, for real?
Submission matches,
for real. Do you think
they
have a chance of working in WWE today?
Yes.
Like, if you booked Bryan versus Cena at SummerSlam, and then it was announced it was a submissions match, do you think that would hurt the match at all?
It would hurt it.
Maybe if the idea was that Bryan snapped, and he kept putting him in the no lock or something and wouldn't let go of it. Cena taps outside of a match or like passes out and Cena wants revenge or whatever.
Yeah,
or
I think something. You have to have Cena tap at some point, which is not going to happen.
I don't think you don't have him pass out.
Have him pass out or something. And be like, so my God, he made Cena tap out or pass out. And okay. I mean,
I just don't like submission matches, so I'd rather they not happen.
There's a decent amount of guys.
Just because of the psychology aspect of it.
I mean, I just don't like giving wrestlers less to work with.
I guess. And the fact that WWE is trained that submissions only work if it's a guy's key move.
Yeah.
You can't really throw an armbar out there and just win with it.
That's true. Like, I think at least to this point, Daniel Bryan has been immune to that a little bit in that the crowd pops whenever he gets a guy in a submission move, even if it isn't the no lock. But even that's going to fade.
You know, I'd like to see maybe another TLC match that doesn't have a climb the ladder stipulation, maybe? I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool for that one time, and I thought that was a fresh take on the TLC match, because why not just have a freaking ladder match? I don't know.
while we go back and read whichever Mick Foley book it was that he talked about the empty arena match in, that is going to do it for us here.
I'm not
going to
read a fucking Mick Foley book. I hated that book.
The first two were good.
I didn't like the first one.
The last seven were not. But, hey, Grody, KFG, and MRT, thank you guys so much for being here. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Yeah, you promised me something, asshole.
We'll get to it after the show.
What?
I'm just mad.
No, I wanted an 11 count. That means it happens during the 10 count, but, like, right after. Guys, you want to see some bad wrestling that no one cares about tomorrow at 8 o'clock, or tonight at 8 o'clock, we're fucking watching fucking bullshit known as Slambury 96. It's fucking, Lethal Lottery, the Battle Bowl. It's shit, so tune in.
I got one last thing to say.
All right.
I can't believe Polkomat's fucking dead.
Oh, it's a shame. We're all so broken up about it. We miss you, Matt.
Yes.
Well, Grody, how about you?
I got nothing.
All right. We'll see you next week, everybody.